D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Dynick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Sportsnet NHL Insider Elliot Freeman, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, is there a shortage of blood pressure monitors in the greater Toronto area ahead of tonight's Game 6?
Monitors and medication. You know, you want to hear something really funny?
Yes.
So a couple minutes ago, like 10 minutes ago, my brother-in-law called me. And, you know, my brother-in-law and I get along really well. We're married to sisters. And but it's rare for him to call. And so I was like, hey, everything okay? He goes, I need you to convince me that everything is going to be okay. He's a huge Leaf fan, like a huge Leaf fan. He's not even sure he can watch the game tonight.
So, it's got to be excruciating.
Yes. For those who have not been paying attention, the Maple Leafs opened a 3-0 series lead on the Ottawa Senators, but the Senators have won the past two games. Game 6 is in Ottawa tonight. So a lot of talk about the demons of old for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But, Elliot, I want to discuss the physicality that we've seen in the Stanley Cup playoffs. We've already seen two suspensions, both in the just completed Battle of Florida series. We've seen a lot of hits that were probably suspension worthy, perhaps. I saw you report just a little bit ago that Mark Scheifele will not be playing in Game 6 for the Winnipeg Jets after he took a high hit from Braden Schenn in the game last night. What is your thought on just the overall physicality of these playoffs so far? I know that it's the Stanley Cup playoffs, so these things are going to happen, but it feels like every night, and I think it was John Cooper after one of the recent games, he's like, I'm tired of talking about all of these suspension worthy hits. What have you made about the physicality so far?
You know, I think that it happens like this now almost every year, Adam, that, you know, I have to prepare to write for the weekend, and I was thinking about it, and you know, there's a number of things that we forget. Number one, you cannot play 82 games in the regular season like these guys play 28 games in the playoffs. It's not humanly possible. So I don't want to use the word coast, but I think there's an understanding that because you can't do that, the game looks really different. Like I think in every sport, the intensity, like the four major team sports in North America, the intensity goes up during the playoffs everywhere. It always does. There's more on the line. But I don't think there's a sport of those where the game changes as much as it does in the NHL from game 82 of the regular season to game one. Number one, everybody forechecks, and everybody forechecks hard. That's number one. Number two, watch how many big hits take place around the center ice red line, because that's the icing line. And so teams make it really hard for you to get there so you can change players or relieve pressure or anything like that.
I'm thinking of the hit that Tom Wilson laid on Alex Carrier in that series.
Perfect example.
Those happen a lot more now. And like just the ferocity of these hits, the game changes incredibly. Like one of the things I say, and a lot of fans have tweeted at me saying they agree with it, is that fans want to know when they buy a ticket or they sit down and they root for a team that the players care as much as they do. In the playoffs, nobody questions it. Like what these guys do to themselves, what these guys do to each other, it's on a whole other level. Even players who don't throw hits in the regular season or don't block shots in the regular season, they're doing it here. And I think that's the thing that we always forget is that, you know, people say the referees change. Like, they've had a lot of issues in the playoffs. There's no sugarcoating that. But the players go to a whole other level, and I think the referees struggle to adapt to that.
Over the past couple of days, Elliot, we've seen two heavy hitters enter the coaching market, Mike Sullivan and Rick Tocchet. You add them to a list that includes Joel Quenneville, John Tortorella, Peter Laviolette. etc. Can you recall a time when this many prominent head coaches were available?
No, you know what? I was thinking about this today, too. I think it's a lot. And I think what the what it's also doing, Adam, is that it has changed also a lot of teams' lists. Like, I think a lot of teams have, you know, a lot of these guys at the top of their list. But if you don't get one, or you can't reach, you can't, whatever, for whatever reason, if you don't get one, I think a lot of the secondary lists are very different. So I think you're going to hear situations where certain guys are available in one case, and or certain guys are being interviewed in one case, might not be the same guys who are getting interviewed in another case. So I think there's going to be a lot of that. You know, Sullivan, I get very mixed messages on Boston. There are some people who believe he will be a candidate there. There's others who don't. I still think the Rangers, to me, like, that's the guy they got to get. I think the Flyers have a lot of interest in Tocchet. I am not sure about Laviolette. I'm trying to determine if he, what his plans are. And Tortorella, same deal. I'm not sure what his plans are. You know, Laviolette and Tortorella both had another year under contract. So if they are interested in coaching, but they want to take a break, they could do that too. And maybe they're finally just at the position in their careers where they say, you know what, it's time. Like Tortorella, there had been some talk about him potentially joining the Flyers front office. You know, the other thing I'll say this too is that there's still teams alive in the playoffs that people wonder about if their team loses, would they make change? And the other one is that I've heard that there are situations where teams that have coaches have looked at these looked at what's out there and said, how do we feel about it and do we need to make a change?
Are the Predators one of those teams, Elliot?
You know, I was waiting for that question. As I was saying it, I was like, I know what the follow-up here is going to be.
You got it.
At this point in time, Adam, I don't, as we do this phone call today at 1:09 your time on a Thursday afternoon, I don't have any reason to believe that the Predators are making any kind of change. You know, Andrew Brunette is leaving for Sweden and Denmark for the World Championships as part of the Team Canada staff. I don't have any reason to believe you guys are doing it. I think it is naive to the extreme to look at the quality of people who are out there right now, Adam, and think that they hadn't at least discussed it internally. But I don't have any reason to believe, like, just should we contact any of these people? How do we feel about any of these people? I think you're not, I don't think you're a good organization if you don't at least ask it internally, but I have no reason to believe as we do this right now, the Predators are going to be doing that.
Elliot Friedman is with us. So Elliot, take it a little further. What do you think it says about Andrew Brunette's stock or, I guess, street cred around the league that he was selected by Team Canada to be part of the coaching staff?
I don't know if like that. I don't know if that changes anything, Willie. Number one, I think it's a good honor. You know, you have a limited pool because it's for teams that are out of the playoffs. But number two, there's always guys who have a lot of interest in doing it. So I think the fact that they went to Brunette, it is a good thing. Like they do not mail in this tournament. This tournament is very important in terms of they want to see some guys who could be on their Olympic radar next year, especially some guys who might be near the cutoff line. So you want good coaching. Number two, Canada, like we're one of the only countries that takes a lot of these tournaments. Like everybody wants to win them, right? But our public wants to do well in them too, even though it's going on at the same time as the Stanley Cup playoffs. So it is considered a good appointment. Like I think it says something about how they feel about Brunette as a coach, that they would go to him and say, hey, would you like to come here and be part of this? This year, I only know of one coach, and that was Rick Tocchet, who declined. I think Tocchet was just tired at the end of this year. But so they do have usually good options to pick from here.
If if they're bringing back Andrew Burnett, and I tend to lean your way. I have no inside info to tell you that, but we see this in circles that we cover a lot in the different sports, Elliot, with college football might be maybe the best example, where a group of people will go to a coach and say, look, you're kind of on the hot seat here. Things didn't go well last year. We want you back, but we would like to see some tweaks, some changes on the staff so that what can be fixed gets fixed. Do you how often does that happen in hockey?
It does happen a bit. I'm not surprised you're asking me this question, Willie, for one thing. It does happen from time to time. I don't always like it, and I'll be honest. Like, in some cases, it's legit. I will say that. But in other cases, I think it's excuse-making and putting the blame on the wrong people. I'm not always crazy about it. I have heard of situations before. They are rare, but they have happened. I think I remember quite the late Pat Quinn doing it once, where he got fired because he refused to fire an assistant coach. Mm-hmm. I'd have to remember the exact situation, but I remember him talking to me about it once. So that kind of thing has happened before. It isn't, I don't always like it, but it happens. Now, the other thing I'll say about this is a lot, like Mike Sullivan, let's just say for argument's sake, the Predators were interested in him. He was making, I think, $5.5 million with the Penguins. And, you know, it's going to be a big number. You know, how do the Predators feel about that? Number two, if Rick Tocchet, he turned down a contract from Vancouver that was in the $4 million slightly above range. How do the Predators feel about that? And I'm not saying,
in other words, you'd be paying Andrew Burnett and then paying a huge fee to go after one of the top dogs or whatever.
Yes. And, you know, Burnett would probably get a job somewhere, so there'd be a little bit of offset. But he could take his time. He could think about it. He could say, maybe not now. I don't like what's out there. And I'm not saying the Predators are cheap or anything like that, because I hate when people take that. It happens too much, and I can't stand that. But I'd be lying if I said it wasn't a factor.
One of the other series that I think is really...
And also, too, like, how do they feel about, not only that, but how do they feel about paying a coach, you know, $4 or $5 million? Not every NHL team believes in that.
Good point. And I think on the other thing that you addressed, we have seen coaches, like you just cited some hockey coaches, that are so loyal to their staff, they'll say, look, I'm not going to make one of my staff, who I feel strongly about, the sacrificial lamb, the offensive coordinator or the defensive coordinator. But I do think there's probably some times where the coach might agree, and remember, Barry Trotz is a former coach, if this discussion were to go on, this is all hypothetical, but maybe everybody agrees, an addition to a staff, or not, you don't even have to subtract somebody necessarily, right? Maybe they agree that there's an ingredient that we're missing.
Yes, I still think that could happen. You're asking me very specific questions here, Willie, and it makes me think that the Predators are considering this, and I have heard rumors about that, but I don't know if it's true. It does happen. Like I said, I don't always like it, but it happens.
I'd love to get your thoughts on the Edmonton-LA series. For people, we're in the Central Time Zone, as you know, Elliot, and so you do have to stay up a little late to watch the end of the games for the Western Conference. But if you do, you've been rewarded with some amazing drama at the end of these games. But the dynamic of the way that the Oilers, who are banged up, and of course a central topic here, you know, not having a Matthias Ekholm, the way they have flipped the series against the Kings, there's a lot of former Preds in the mix there with Fiala and Arvidsson and some of these guys. It has been really something to watch.
It's, you know, some of us do stay up after midnight in the Eastern time zone, Willie. You should know that, okay?
Yes.
Some of it for work reasons, others because we love the sport. But, I mean, the quality of hockey in these playoffs has been phenomenal. I'll tell you something about Arvidsson. I think Garveston was one of a number of Oilers who was very frustrated this year. Just because I think, like Toronto's had this problem too. Like, when you have your superstars, and Edmonton's got two of the best in the league, and there's so much the core of your team, I think sometimes other guys struggle to find roles, or they feel they're not being given enough opportunity. And I think there's a bunch of Oilers guys, and Arvidsson would be one of them, who at times this year have been frustrated by that. And now they're taking advantage. They're out there, and they're getting the chances. And I believe that coach, right from the first game of the playoffs, Chris Knobloch, he thought it was very important that some of their other players felt like they mattered. And to me, one of the biggest differences in that series is that the Oilers feel there's more guys they can play than the Kings. Where this series really changed was in that overtime game in game four, where the Kings were down to 9 forwards and 4 defensemen. They were exhausted, and the Oilers were skating rings around them. Meanwhile, the Oilers continue playing all their defensemen, all their forwards, and guys like Arvidsson have really, really stepped up. Like, this has been his time to shine, and he's done it. You know, Fiala and the Kings, like, they've let Edmonton off the mat. If they lose this series, they're going to regret it, because they had them. They scored 12 goals in the first two games. Fiala and a lot of those other Kings players look great, and they let them off the mat, and now they're on the ropes. There'll be big regrets for the Kings if they don't win this series.
The thing that's so compelling about this first round, and every year this is the case, you have series where it's so close, just a couple of plays. Mm-hmm. And last year's Canucks-Predators series, for sure, would fall into this category. You go back for just a couple of plays, it could have switched, and maybe Nashville would win in six instead of losing in six, or at least it goes to seven. The Wild, of course, are in one of these types of series with Vegas. Very, very close. The Wild scored a goal that easily could have put them up 3-2, and it was inches offside. Vegas wins in overtime. The Predators mm-hmm. have Vegas's first pick. If they lose, the Predators would be guaranteed, now that Tampa's out, to have three picks in the top 24. We know the lottery is coming up on Monday. What are the Wild's chances, in your mind, Elliot, of winning two in a row and eliminating Vegas?
It sounds like an enormous challenge to win two in a row against them. I look at it this way. Right now, Willie, you got to win one. This has been the best series that nobody talks about. Like, the Wild and the Golden Knights have put on a great series. I think Vegas is obviously the favorite, but there's no reason Minnesota can't do it. They've been right there with them. They've given them a fierce battle. They just got to win tonight. Worry about game seven later. They just have to win tonight.
Elliot,
and I don't see any reason why they can't do it.
Sorry about that, Elliot. Before we let you go.
No problem, man.
I do want to ask you about something that I find interesting. So the Hart Trophy finalists were announced today by the NHL. Leon Draisaitl, mm-hmm. Connor Hellebuck, and Nikita Kucherov. Yesterday, the Ted Lindsay Award finalists were unveiled, and that is the most outstanding player award as chosen by the players. That was Nikita Kucherov, Nathan MacKinnon, and Cale Makar, by the way, the Hart Trophy nominated by the Professional Hockey Writers Association. So I'm curious about, you've got Kucherov, MacKinnon, Makar as the players' MOP. You've got Draisaitl, Hellebuck, and Kucherov as the writers' MVP. I'm curious for your point on that sort of disparity between the players' view of that award, you know, the players' view of the most outstanding player versus the writers' view of the most valuable player.
You know what? I think I don't mind it. I find it very interesting too, Adam. And I think sometimes it just reminds us of, you know, how differently we look at things. Like I'll tell you this, that like I didn't have the top three on my ballot the same as either. And I'll tell you a quick story. A couple of years ago, there was one award. It was the Norris Trophy, the year Erik Karlsson won. I had real pushback from players. The most I've ever heard. Like, there were players who were really, like, they really gave it to me after that one. And like, I listened. I just said, okay, what do you guys think matters? Why didn't you like it? And I think that the players simply look at it. What they told me was, like, for a defenseman, they just disagreed with that year. But I think overall, they look at who do they think was the best player that season. Like, sometimes we look at, is the criteria is a bit different, the best player on their team or the most valuable player to their team. I think the players look at it as, who did they see as, like, the best player that year? That's what they told me. And I have no problem. I think, to me, it seems perfectly normal that from time to time, players would see it differently than us. And I don't have a problem with that at all.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on the program presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. Enjoy all of the Game Sixes tonight, particularly Toronto and Ottawa.
I'll tell my brother-in-law you're concerned about him. Okay.
I will. I am. I don't want him to be suffering. That doesn't sound fun at all.
I'll speak to you guys in a week.
Okay, that's good. Thanks, Elliot.
We'll do a checkup.
Yes, we will. Thank you, Elliot. Elliot Freeman on the program. All right, let's react to Elliot, particularly about what he has heard about Barry Trotz and Andrew Brunette. We'll do that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.